Proverbs 19, starting in verse 10. Delight is not seemly for a fool, much less for a servant to have rule over princes. The discretion of a man deferreth his anger, and it is his glory to pass over a transgression. Now, verse 11 is going to be the key verse to our study. Everything else will revolve around verse 11 there. The king's wrath is as the roaring of a lion, but his favor is as dew upon the grass. A foolish son is the calamity of his father, and the contentions of a wife are a continual dropping. Houses and riches are the inheritance of fathers, and a prudent wife is from the Lord. Slothfulness casteth into deep sleep, and an idle soul shall suffer hunger. Now, tonight we're looking at this, wisdom and discretion. And you see that in verse 11. The discretion of a man deferreth his anger, and it is his glory to pass over a transgression. And when you think of two words, they're very synonymous, and there's an overlap, and that is the word discretion and the word discernment. Often they're used interchangeably, and I'm not saying that's a negative, that's just they are used that way, and in our English language, they're much more synonymous, I think, than how they're used in Scripture. But there is a difference, and if we look at it more specifically, I think we're going to understand there's a difference of these two. Sorry, my tablet just kind of did its own thing there for a moment. And so there's a difference in the two that I want to show you, and then we're going to focus obviously on discretion, not discernment. But I want to explain what is the difference between discretion and discernment, because a lot of times we'll say, well, you got to have discretion about that, or we'll say we have to discernment about that, and we mean the same thing, but there is a difference, and that's what I want to point out as we get into the Bible study. So we're going to be a little more specific about the difference. When you think of discernment is this. Discernment is discovering how one thing differs from another. Basically, what's right and what's wrong. What's right and what's wrong. Okay, that's basically discernment. We look at a situation and say, this is right, this is wrong. Well, the Bible helps us obviously in that, but it doesn't say, thou shalt not about every single situation in life. So we draw principles from it and apply it to life, and we say, well, this is right, this is wrong, based on biblical principle. And that's how we're talking about discernment. Discernment is that ability or that wisdom or that the understanding of something. So we say, this is right, this is wrong. There's a difference of the two. This one's the right one, this one's the wrong one. Well, discretion is going to be different. Discretion is a more finer point. Discretion considers choices of action based on that discernment. For the study tonight, and I think overall this would be true, but especially true for the study tonight, discretion deals with a discernment of what is right. So the study is not about deciding right and wrong. Okay, that was more like last week, chapter 18, talking about the dangers of foolishness. And that would be a discernment. Okay, this is wise, this is foolish, this is right, this is wrong. Discretion now is looking at only that which is right and saying, now, based on what's right, what should I do? So the assumption here, or what's implied here, is that there's already a decision or a desire to do that which is right. So discretion applies to the discernment that you just made. So let's say it a little bit different here. Discernment, then, is choosing between right and wrong. That's not a whole lot different than what you said a moment ago, but that's a little bit shorter. Discernment is choosing between right and wrong. Discretion is choosing between good, better, and best. Because sometimes when we say this is right, but I might have multiple choices within the right. Well, I could do it this way, and this way, or this way. And they're all right, but what is the best way of doing it? Now you may say, well, what is it? As long as they're right, what does it matter? Here's why it matters. The Lord deserves our best. We ought to have the desire to give the Lord the best we can give him, not just leftovers. You could feed your family anything. You can just go to Aldi's and get a can of SpaghettiOs and a box of instant macaroni and cheese. Now, Lori would love that. She loves SpaghettiOs. But if you're thinking about what's healthy and what's good for them, you're going to think, okay, that may be life-sustaining for a short time. At least you're not starving to death. But when it comes to really what's best, what is the best thing for their health, you might say, well, they need some raw vegetables there. They need some fruit. They need something that's like a salad, something that's much more healthy than a can of SpaghettiOs and a box of instant macaroni and cheese. And so discretion then is choosing between what's good, what's better, and what's best. And we want to give what the best we can to the Lord. So that's why the need for discretion. Now, with that thought in mind, understand this. Not every sermon or Bible study needs to be, get right with God, you wicked sinner. Sometimes we think, you know, every sermon, get right with God, get right. But what about those who, okay, I'm not saying you're perfect, but you're basically, you're right with God. You're not trying to, okay, you didn't spend last week selling drugs on the corner. Okay, you're not cheating on your spouse. You're not, you know, you're not beating your kids. You're not, well, maybe kicking your dog a little bit, but you're mostly nice to your animals. You know, you pay your bills. You're a decent human being, and you're trying to do right. So it can't be, every service can't be get right with God. I think most of the time, for people who are trying to do right, the message is more like this: here's the best way to do what is right. And that's kind of the Bible study tonight, the best way to do what is right. And so the study tonight really applies to those who want to do right. They understand the need for this wise discretion. So you're not choosing between right and wrong. You say, no, I already want to do right. Okay, well, how can we do right the best we can? So the basis of these lessons, then, is those who have already decided to do right. Let me give you one more little disclaimer before we get to the first point. Basically, what we're talking about tonight, though, is dealing with people. I guess it applies in a broader way, but a lot of times it deals with people. What's the best way? And it's usually a people situation, because that's what we are. We're people who live among other people, and we have to make decisions here. So I'm going to give you four. I think I have four. Four big lessons from chapter 19 about having some discretion, choosing within the bounds of right what is the best thing to do. All right, so let's go back to chapter 19. Look with me in verse 2. Also, that the soul be without knowledge, it is not good. And he that watches hasteth with his feet, sinneth. Then verse 3, the foolishness of man perverteth his way, and his heart fretteth against the Lord. And then go down to verse 8, he that getteth wisdom loveth his own soul. He that keepeth understanding shall find good. And then down to verse 20, hear counsel and receive instruction, that thou mayest be wise in thy latter end. There are many devices in a man's heart, nevertheless the counsel of the Lord, that shall stand. And I think you understand why we use those verses when we get to some the nitty-gritty of point one. So here's the first application, first lesson about discretion. Number one is this: don't rush into a decision. I'm trying to decide what's the best way to do it. One of the things is, don't rush into that decision. Because if we rush into it, we may not make the best decision. So we give ourselves some time. Now, deciding between right and wrong typically is done pretty quickly. Once we decide what's right, deciding how to do that, what is the best way to do it, it may take much longer. I'll give you an illustration. I was going through a situation. I had to make a decision about something. Someone asked me, what are you going to do? And here's what I said. I don't know what I'm going to do. I said, well, I know this. I'm going to do the right thing. But I'm not exactly sure how I'm going to do the right thing. But I'm going to do what's right. I think that should be our attitude. I'm going to do what's right. Now, how to do that may take a little bit of time to figure out. But our heart should be, I'm going to do the right thing. That's pretty easy. If it's between, should I pay my bills or should I not pay my bills? Well, the right thing would be what? Pay your bills. If the choice is, should I gossip or should I not gossip? Which is the right choice? Not gossip. Okay, so those are easy choices. That's not really hard to figure out. But when I say, okay, how are you going to handle this situation with this person in this relationship? How are you going to fix this or deal with this or accomplish this? Well, that's much harder. I'm going to do what's right, but how to do that is what takes a lot more time. So this delay that we're talking about is not because of fear or laziness. It's not because I'm sitting there and I'm afraid to make a decision. I'm paralyzed by fear. I don't mean that. Nor do I mean I don't care, I'm just being lazy and not making any. I says, well, you know, when I get time, I'll figure it out. I'm not talking about being lazy about it. I'm just saying I'm not going to rush in, because this might need some time to think about what is the best thing to do. So let me give you some little bit more. You'll notice you have some arrows there, so let's go a little bit more in detail of this. Okay, not rushing a decision can make a good decision become a better decision. That's why I'm holding off. I can say, well, I'm just okay, I'm going to do this. Or maybe I'll give it some time and have a better decision, or maybe a best decision. So how does that work? Let me give you four little thoughts about that. First is this: time allows wisdom to rule rather than our emotions. And you see that about the anger and the hastiness. Time allows wisdom to rule rather than our emotions of the moment. If I have to make a decision right now and my emotions are working right now, that may not be the best decision. It may be a right decision, but it may not be the best decision. My emotions may be too, I may be too involved emotionally. And so if I give it time, then my emotion subsides, whether it's anger or watch this. What if, I'll use myself. There are times when I go into certain stores and I see something and I really want it. I really convince myself I need it. I've never had it before. I'm not sure what I'm going to do with it, but I really want this. This is cool. Man, I got to have this. I have the money to pay for it. It's not a sinful thing. It's not like I'm going to do something wrong with it. And I'm not going to, and I have some money set aside, maybe some extra money to, and so I'm not robbing Peter to pay Paul. So I could do it, and it would check all the boxes. It would be a right thing to do, but is it the best way to use my money? Well, at the moment, yes, because I really want it. But I find this, if I go home and don't buy it that day, give myself 24 hours, almost always, at least probably three-fourths of the time, I change my mind. Because I say, here's what I said, I'm going to be 54, I've never had it yet. I made it almost 54 years without it. Could I live the rest of my life without it? Yeah, probably could. Have I ever had a need for it? I was going to buy something the other day. And I said, man, this is cool. I saw it online. I said, man, this is the coolest thing. It's only 20 bucks. I got 20 bucks. I can do this. And then I asked myself, what would I use that for? I don't know. Well, man, I'd love to have it. But why would I spend 20 bucks for something I don't even know what I would use it for? So I waited all day and looked at it again at the end of the night and I said, nah, delete. And the whole idea is giving time allows wisdom to rule rather than the emotion of the moment, because our emotions can drive us and help us, encourage us to make a decision that's not the best. It's not a wrong decision, but it's not the best decision. So time allows wisdom to rule over the emotions. There's another reason to give it some time, not to rush into a decision. That is this. Time allows us to gather as much information as possible before deciding. Some time ago, I had to make a decision, and I knew I had to make a decision. So I waited, I gathered more and more information, and finally I made a decision. Now the time period was 3 years between when I said, okay, I need to make a decision, and the time I made the decision. Now when I made the decision, I made someone real mad. And they said, why did you wait 3 years for that decision? I said, because I wasn't sure of everything. It took me 3 years to make sure I was sure of everything, because when I make the decision, and I know it's going to be a hard decision, I want to make sure I'm sure of the information. So I wasn't being lazy. I wasn't scared to make the decision. I just wanted to make sure I was sure about what I was doing. The information was correct. So time allows us to gather as much information as possible. I'm not saying you've got to wait three years before making a decision, but you do need to make sure the information is correct and have as much information as possible, and time, it takes some time to do that. There's another reason to give it some time, and that is this. Time allows us to seek out counsel, to talk to some people, get some information. So instead of just rushing in to make a decision, say, wait a minute, before I make a decision, maybe I have some time to talk to some people about it. And then there's a fourth, and this is an important one. They're all important, but this is maybe the most important. Time allows God to work, which may change the decision we make. Now, I've learned this the hard way. I say, okay, I'm just going to do this. And then down the road, the Lord changes things around. I'm thinking, oh, man, I should have waited. I could have made such a better decision if I'd have waited. And so we got to give the Lord some time to work. Got to be sure that this is within the time period the Lord wants us. Sometimes it's just better to wait to see what God's going to do in this situation. So we're going to have discretion. Okay, this is what's right. Now I need to make a decision within what's right. Well, give it some time. Don't rush in. Sometimes time helps making a good decision into a better decision. Then there's a second big thing, I think, when it comes to discretion within chapter 19. That's what, again, if you've been here in our Bible studies, we frame every study within the chapter we're doing. We could go all other places in the Bible and come up with other things, but we're trying to stay within chapter 19. So go with me to verse 4. Let's look at the second idea. Verse 4, wealth maketh many friends, but the poor is separated from his neighbor. Verse 6, many will entreat the favor of the prince, and every man is a friend to him that giveth gifts. And then look at verse 7. All the brethren of the poor do hate him. How much more do his friends go far from him? He pursues them with words, yet they are wanting to him. So all of this has a similar teaching, which is basically, as far as the world is concerned, wealth is what gets you ahead. Money talks. People respect the dollar. You know, if you got the nice car, the nice house, the nice clothes, people see money, then they respect you. But if you're the guy, you know, holes in your clothes, you look like, you know, your car is like, let's say it's a, I don't know, it's just a, maybe it's old Ford Focus or something. Let's say, you know, it's a car that's falling apart. Now, it doesn't mean you can't afford a better car, but maybe that's the car you got. Trying to throw you out of bone there. And so that's the car you got. But people look at it and they automatically say, well, you know, and they just discard you because of that. And that's, now it's not right, but that is how the world is, and that's what the Proverbs is talking about. That's exactly how people treat you. Now, how does that help us with discretion? Number two is this. Don't make financial gain the only consideration. When we're trying to make a decision, it can't all be about money. That's how the world is. The world's all about money. What makes the most money? I want a career. What makes the most money? That's how it was before I gave my life to the Lord. I said, what makes the most money? I said, I want to be a doctor. Oh, you want to help people? I could care less about people. But they make the most money. That was my attitude. I want to make the most money. I don't know if that's true. Well, it's true. I didn't care about people. But I don't know if it's true that they make the most money. But that's how I thought about it. I want to be a lawyer. They make a lot of money. I want to be an engineer. They make a lot of money. That's how the world looks at things. But that's not how we as believers, we're trying to make a decision. Now, it doesn't mean that money's not important. Okay, there is an importance to money. It's just that's not the only consideration. It's not the main consideration. So let me give you this because sometimes I think we go off the ditch on the other side, and that's not good. It isn't wrong to be wise and prudent with your finances. Okay, poverty is not a sign of godliness. It's not necessarily a sign of wickedness either, but it's not a sign of godliness. You don't have to be poor to be godly. I'm not criticizing poverty. I'm just saying, but I'm not elevating it either. So it's not wrong to be wise and prudent with our finances. Often, if you read the Bible, you'll notice that God blesses and rewards those who use wisdom financially. God blesses that. He expects you to not be throwing money away. He expects you to use some wisdom about that. That is true. But when we think about this discretion and not making financial gain the only consideration, the danger is when that becomes the sole arbitrator of every decision. So it's not wrong to say, okay, let's consider money because money is important. I only got so much of it. But the thing is, it can't be the only thing I consider. It can't be the sole arbitrator. Everything can't revolve around my income or my checkbook. It can't be the only thing that I'm considering. So the danger is when it becomes the sole arbitrator. Now, think about it this way. The best way to do what is right may not be the best way to save money. Sometimes you got to understand that. Well, that doesn't make sense. That's going to cost more. But that doesn't make it wrong. Can you consider that? You can consider cost. You can consider expense. But it can't be the only arbitrator of what we're considering here. So the financial component cannot be the only part of our decision-making of how to do what is right. So it cannot be the only part, and it should not be the most important part. Now, most likely it will play an important role. Can't hog the spotlight, though. You understand the difference? It has an important role, but it can't be everything focused on what does this mean financially. Because if you're trying to decide how to live for the Lord and do what's right, and money is the main focus, you're not going to make the best decisions. Because you're going to say, well, I can do less for the Lord, it won't cost me as much. But that's not how you look at it. You look at it, how can I do the most I can? My life is short. I can't quote the song exactly, and I won't sing it for you. But it basically says, only that which is done for Christ will last. And so I'm going to meet the Lord soon, and I want to have something to throw at his feet. I don't want to be skimping on what I can do for Jesus. So can't make financial gain the only consideration. If we're going to have discretion, we can't make money the only thing that is the decider of how we're going to do this. So those are the two don'ts. I'm going to give you, next two are more of what to do now. So don't rush into it. Don't make financial gain the only consideration. Shouldn't be the only one. It shouldn't be the main one. Can be one, and probably should be one, but it can't be the only one or the main one. Number three, go with me back to Proverbs 19, look at verse 10. Delight is not seemly for a fool, much less for a servant to have rule over princes. Verse number 11, the discretion of a man deferreth his anger, and is his glory, watch us, to pass over a transgression. The king's wrath is the roaring of a lion, but his favor is as a dew upon the grass. And then go down to verse 22. The desire of a man is his kindness, and a poor man is better than a liar. And then look at verse 23. The fear of the Lord tendeth to life, and he that hath it shall abide satisfied. He shall not be visited with evil. Now, I think there's kind of a double play here. I think fearing the Lord brings life to us because it's a blessing. We're doing what's right. But also, I think it means this, that when you think about fear of the Lord, you're thinking more about life. You think about maybe your life, others' lives. You're more concerned about those things. So here brings us to number three, and that is this. Err on the side of grace. Let me tell you, I think this is one that we have to always can keep in consideration. Err on the side of grace. If I'm going to make a mistake, I'm going to make a mistake that I'm too gracious. Not that I wasn't gracious enough. I can't always be gracious, and some people won't let you be gracious. But I want to try at least to be gracious. Err on the side of grace. When all other things are equal, do that which is the most gracious thing to do. It's not an easy way to live. Some people take advantage of it. But if you're going to do what's best, you're going to have to learn to be gracious. When all other things are equal, do that which is the most gracious thing to do. Let me give you this statement. Sometimes people don't understand it, but here's how I think about it. You can always, and I put an air quote so people don't think I'm actually meaning to physically harm someone, you can always, air quote, kill someone, but you can't always bring them back to life. I mean, you can come down hard and heavy on someone. And you say, well, it's going to be this way. And you can, and yeah, it could be. But if you were too hard and you lose that person, you may never get them back. You may, it's like back to the, I think we saw this in a previous, this verse in a previous study about, I think it was last week actually, about the, a brother offended, it's hard to be one than a great city because his contentions are like the bars of a castle. Once they're offended, once their heart is hard towards you, it's hard to win them back. And so you want to be careful to get to that point. So you can always kill them, yes. But once you do that, you're kind of stuck, so you want to be careful getting to that point. So the question, I think, would be this. Well, what does it mean to be gracious? Because we could go around the room, and everyone has an idea of what's gracious. And I'm not condemning your idea. I'm trying to be nice. I'm trying to be gracious here. Okay, I'm not condemning your idea. I'm not saying you're wrong, but I want you to understand what I'm saying, so I'm going to define it from my point of view so you understand what I'm trying to get across. So the question then, what does it mean then to be gracious in a practical sense? So I said, err on the side of grace. Be gracious to people. Always try to be gracious if you can. So what does it mean to be gracious? Well, I'm going to give you six thoughts about it. So we're trying to make a decision. What's best? I'm going to be gracious because I think doing what is gracious is the best thing to do. So what does that mean? Well, give me six thoughts about it. Give them the benefit of the doubt. That's being gracious. I could be wrong. Here's how it appears. Could be wrong. Here's what I heard. It could be wrong. Here's what I thought I saw. It could be wrong. Or this, give them another chance. What if you are right? Sometimes you can just give them another chance. I know there comes a limit. We'll talk about that in a moment. But if you can, give them another chance. Okay, here's another way about being gracious. Consider how it will affect them. You're going to do something. Okay, here's what I have several choices here, but how's it going to affect them? And I don't really want to totally ruin their life if I don't have to. I want to help them, encourage them. So consider how it will affect them. Here's another thought about it. Suffer the wrong. If you're going to be gracious, you're going to suffer the wrong. Take it on the chin. Some people don't appreciate it. Some people don't respond well to it. Suffer the wrong. Here's another thought about it. Swallow your pride. Sometimes we're not gracious because it's our pride that's been hurt. We want to, well, they got to know who's boss. And sometimes it is true. Sometimes it's an attack on your leadership. Sometimes it's just a matter of you swallowing your pride. Then here's the last one. This kind of goes to suffer the wrong, but maybe it's a little more exact about it, slightly different. And that last one is this: be willing to be taken advantage of. Someone said this years ago. In fact, I think they said it in pastor school. Brother Choman, you might remember. There was a guy who was singing, and he was taking all these like old country songs and he was turning them into different type of kind of Christian songs. It was kind of a skit type thing. And like there's an old country song, you picked a fine time to leave me, Lucille, and he retitled it, you found a fine time to leave me, Loose Will. He's talking about a car going down the highway and a wheel goes off and he starts singing that. So he was turning, it's like a little turn of phrase. It was just skit. Okay, it was just the skit part. It was a funny part of it. Okay, it wasn't the main preaching. But anyways, he said this, and I remember this statement. He said, "It's not what people tell me that bothers me. It's when they expect me to believe what they're telling me that bothers me." And sometimes that's true. They tell you something and you know, you're thinking, that just doesn't line up. That doesn't add up. It doesn't make sense. But I'm going to go with it because I'm trying to help you here. I'm trying to be gracious here. So I could really come down and do this, and that would be right within my purview, but I'm going to do this because I think this is better. I'm going to be gracious, even though what I think you're telling me, you're trying to blow some smoke my way, but I'm just going to go with you because I'm going to be gracious to you. Now, sometimes, again, there's a limit, and that's what we're going to talk about here at this point. There may be a time limit on showing them grace. And I think that's understandable. Okay, you've done it. You've shown them grace. Okay, there could be a time limit on showing them grace. But it should be evident that there was a time of showing them grace. So there could be a time limit. You say, okay, you know what? No more grace. But when you get to that point, you should be able to point back and say, but I was gracious and was gracious and was gracious and was gracious. There shouldn't be no doubt that you were gracious. So, yes, there can be a time limit, but there should have been a time of already showing them grace. Probably the best example, obviously, is the ark. Was there a time limit? Yeah. When God shut the door was shut. There was no more opportunity for him getting on the ark. And it wasn't, I hate to bust your bubble. Okay. It wasn't Noah with an umbrella, and it was raining, and the animals were walking up, and he's like, hurry up, hurry up. Okay, that's not how it was. It was a sunshiny day. They're all in the ark, and God shut the door. For 7 days, the sun shone. For 7 days, they could sit there and say, "Wait, maybe we should, maybe we shouldn't." Doesn't matter. You're not the door is shut. God shut the door, and door wasn't opening for another year. The limit had been reached. But for 120 years, God was gracious. For 120 years. They stood there and watched this boat. And if you ever been and see, I would encourage you to see the ark. It is just when you look at it, you're like, how could you watch this for 100, and this, it's huge. How could you see this and not think about something's going to happen? Something's going to happen. But they didn't respond. They didn't respond to the ark, building of the ark. They didn't respond to the preaching of Noah. But there was time of showing them grace. But then that time limit was reached. So err on the side of grace. I think that's the third thing we do in an area of discretion, trying to decide what is best. Then there's a fourth and the final thing. And that brings us to chapter 19. Look at verse 15. Slothfulness casts us into deep sleep, and an idle soul shall suffer hunger. Go to verse 18. Chasten thy son while there is hope, and let not thy soul spare for his crying. And then look at verse 24. A slothful man hideth his hand in his bosom and will not so much as bring it to his mouth again. All those talk about doing something which is hard, which it is hard to chasten your son when he's, you know, crying and everything and trying to beg you, please don't. Okay, I'm not talking about abusing or anything, but no kid wants to be chastened. Doesn't matter what the chastening is. If you tell him you're going to be grounded, oh, please, please let me play my game, or please let me play with my friends, or, please let me go watch TV, they'll cry and they'll, but you say, no, this is it. This is what we said, and this is how it's going to be. So what does that mean? Number four is this. Be willing to do the hard thing. So if I'm going to do the best thing, I got to be willing to do the hard thing. Because sometimes the best thing is hard to do. The easy thing, it may be right to do, but if I put more energy and effort into it, I can do something better. Now, think about it this way. Don't choose it or refuse it. A little bit of rhyming there for you. Don't choose it or refuse it just because it's hard. So just because it's hard doesn't make it best. Okay, you can't say, well, this is the hardest thing. It must be the right thing. It may not be. So don't choose it just because it's, but don't say, well, that's the hardest, so is there an easier choice? No, choose what's best. And if the best thing is a hard thing, then do it anyways. So if we're going to have discretion, we've got to be willing to do the hard thing. Let me see if I can put it two different ways, maybe to kind of zing it your way, maybe make it stick in your head. How about this? Comfort and convenience can be your companions in life, but never your God. You can walk with them. There's nothing wrong with having comfort and convenience. It's not like, you know, it's got to be, it's got to be bread and water and living under the bridge the rest of your life. Okay? I mean, I'm saying it has to be hard. Okay, and you can have comfort and convenience, but they can never be your God. They can't. Your whole life can't be revolving just about what's comfortable and convenient. Now I'll give you one more little rhyme scheme here. Ready? We will do less than our best when comfort is the test. How do you like that? We will do less than our best when comfort. So if I'm looking at good, better, and best, and comfort becomes the watchword, okay, what is the most comfortable? I'm probably never going to choose the best. Because typically the best is a harder choice. Typically. Not always, but typically. It takes more energy, more effort. Not as comfortable, not as convenient. So be willing to do the hard thing. All right, let's get to the end. And that is this. Many times our decisions are two-step processes. The first step is decide what's right and wrong. That's always the first step. Okay, what's the right thing? What's the wrong thing? Hopefully you always choose what to do is right. You choose the right thing to do. Now, once you do that, then the second step then is decide how to do right the best way possible, which is what we're talking about tonight. Now, that said, here's the last statement. The more we grow as a Christian, the more we see the importance of that second step. When you're a younger Christian, I think you're more in the first step. Okay, what's right and wrong? And all of a sudden, the preacher, oh, I didn't know that was wrong. Oh, I got to quit doing that. Oh, I didn't know that was right. I got to start doing that. And as you're a young Christian, that's more evident, more part of your life. But as you grow and you make these decisions, hopefully over a period of time, these things that were wrong, you stopped doing. And these things that are right, you have started doing. So now it's not about get right because you've already gotten right about that. So now it's more about the second step. How then within that place of doing right, how do I do that? And that's where really becomes a great need for wisdom and discretion in our lives.